Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And we are back. No rugby, obviously, but still, amazingly enough, there's stuff to talk about, which is why I'm looking at Phil right now. How you doing, Phil?
Hello, Tim.
Hood up, like some kind of vigilante, just in from doing some crime fighting. What's going on?
Hood up, vest on, usual stuff.
Actually, yeah, vest on. You look like fresh from a workout, more likely. Is that what you've been doing?
No, not recently, actually. I'm just wearing a lot more sportswear than I usually wear, seeing as I'm in lockdown.
JB, when was the last time you wore a pair of jeans?
Yesterday, but prior to that, it was 8 weeks ago.
The last time I wore a pair of jeans was when you and I went out for that few pints, the Friday before everything got shut down.
I don't like to talk about myself too much, but what wisdom that we displayed that evening.
We really did.
Really did pull out the bag there.
Yeah.
The last weekend, I got, the weekend before lockdown, I got a Thursday night out and a Saturday night out.
Wow.
And then everything was locked down.
I would like to think that us three have this kind of potential that if we were on the Titanic, we would have got to the life rafts way before any of the women and kids.
Right. So there's obviously, amazingly, there is still stuff to talk about. I think largely because rugby is just getting deep into the political wrangling and stakeholders trying to draw lines in the sand, stick flags in the ground and all kinds of other stuff. So should we just jump into the mire, the quagmire that rugby is becoming?
Do it.
Or everything off the field in rugby that it's becoming. So what do we know that we didn't know last week?
We've had... It depends which way we're going to go. If we're going to go domestic in the UK or domestic generally, or the World Rugby elections. So the World Rugby elections, which were they were held last weekend. They were supposed to be announced on the 12th of May, but there has been a much earlier announcement than expected. And Bill Bowman has retained the role of chairman at the expense of Augustin Pichot.
Who I assume now fades into obscurity because he's no longer the vice, is he?
Correct. He's not the vice. He's got no official role in World Rugby. There's a few other positions. Obviously, Augustin Pichot went for the big one, failed to get the big one, which obviously Bill Bowman has got. And he had no running mate. And Bernard Lepore, we assume, is the vice chair.
And when you look at the votes and how they were spread, Bill Beaumont, by virtue of having the support of the Six Nations, won. Because that was 18 of the 53 votes or 52 votes. I think Bill Beaumont would have been the 53rd vote if one was needed. But 18 of the votes were three votes each for each Six Nations nation, of which Bill Beaumont got the lot with the help of Bernard Lepore. Kind of in his pocket.
So it's a little bit sad because I've really liked Augustin Pichot until very recently. He struck me as the more dynamic of the two. And it feels like it was all or nothing for him, unless he goes into some other role. It feels like he came swinging for the champ and missed.
I think that's a fair assessment. And he wasn't too far behind. Bill Beaumont has promised changes. And there's been lots of talk of the global calendar getting sorted out. I just wonder if the fact that the Six Nations countries supported Bill Beaumont and they were the road hump that stopped a global, the last global tournament that Bill Beaumont tried to put through in his last term. I wonder if the same will happen again. What do you think will, what do you think we'll be saying 4 years from now when the next one is? Or mean, 2 years or however long.
Yeah, four years, I think.
4 years.
I don't think this election solves anything, really. Because they can promise change as much as they like, but as long as they don't have jurisdiction over the things that they want to change, it's beyond me how they do it. So they can say until they're blue in the face that they're going to have a global tournament. But if the Six Nations say, no, you're not having a global tournament, guess what's not going to happen? So it could have been Bill. It could have been Pichot. I don't think anything changes. It was just one of those things where they were speaking a good game about all the potential things that they could do, but I don't think they can get anything done. I don't see how they can.
So that is going to be interesting, because there was two reports today in the Times and the Rugby Paper that Beaumont and others, including potentially the Six Nations, are looking at a revised global calendar and global competition that, yeah, at least on the face of it from these reports, appears to have some of the backing of the Six Nations. Now, there's a key part to it that I think you can't get the backing of the Six Nations, which I'll explain in a second. So the previous version of the global tournament was supposed to be over 1 year, where I think it was going to be 10 team leagues and everyone plays each other once in that year. And the 10 team league was basically the Six Nations and the Rugby Championship. So Six Nations all play each other in broadly the normal time scale. Rugby Championship all play each other in broadly the normal time scale. And then between the summer and autumn internationals, everyone plays everyone else. So all the Northern Hemisphere teams play the Southern Hemisphere.
In a mini tournament format. In one city or country.
Right. Now, so this has changed from that, or the proposal appears to have changed. So they appear to have expanded it to a 12-team, or three 12-team leagues are being proposed, with the top tier being all those teams, plus most likely Fiji and Japan being the next best of the rest. But it is proposed that there is movement between the tiers. And that's the bit that I cannot see any Six Nation teams, or certainly I cannot see all of
Scotland
the Six
and
Nations
Italy
teams.
Scotland and Italy won't.
Correct. Yeah. I can't see all of the Six Nations teams. And as I understand it, all the Six Nation teams would need to vote for that for the relegation to happen, or relegation and promotion to happen.
Not just Italy and Scotland that need to be worried. This can happen to any team. I mean, it could conceivably happen to Ireland, though. I know Ireland fans think that's ridiculous. Not a big playing population. They need a few injuries. They could be bottom. Wales could be bottom very easily.
Yeah, nonetheless, I believe I'm right in saying, although I don't think this was ever official, but I believe it was Ireland and Scotland that just said, under no circumstances are we doing it, and that's why it didn't get anywhere.
And that might actually be sensible. I mean, well, just putting an Irish hat on or a Scottish hat on, it probably is sensible.
Yeah.
But it's sensible to a point, because one of the things that we spoke about over the last few weeks is the importance of growing the pot, as in,
yeah,
there are fundamental funding issues right across rugby. No one, and COVID-19 has exacerbated it and highlighted it, but no one is safe. No one is immune from that position. Not the All Blacks, which is the strongest brand in rugby, which we'll talk about on our next pod. That is one of the best global sports brands, strongest brand in rugby. They've had 70% revenue hit at this point in time, and they've had to massively cut the wages of a lot of their players. So no one's immune from this. So one of the things that you can do is grow the global pot. And I'm in favour of growing the global pot broadly. I just need to see a proposal that meets the criteria, that continues the Six Nations, continues the strength of the best tournament in the world, gets the top teams playing against each other, and the bit that this misses, this proposal, is getting the weaker teams opportunities to play against the bigger teams. Now, that's the bit I don't like about this. But what I understand this is balancing off is, by having this global tournament and creating additional revenues, there is going to be improved revenue sharing between the different tiers, because this is proposing it as three separate 12 team competitions, but sharing the money out a bit more fairly.
Yeah, but
that seems attractive.
My issue, just to echo your point, is, well, two issues. One, if you're Scotland, for instance, and you're in charge of the Scottish game, you should be looking after the best interests of the Scottish game. And if that means that your team might be relegated and then all the kids in Scotland go and play football instead of rugby because they've got no Six Nations matches, nobody cares about rugby and it dies in Scotland, when then you have manifestly failed in your commitment to Scottish rugby for some greater good, which actually turns out not to be that great. The second thing is, the idea of growing the pot sounds so simple. I believe that if it was that simple, it would have been done. And Super Rugby is the best example of this. If you come to me and show me, oh, we're going to have this team play this team, and we're going to expand into this area and this market, and we'll just Pro 14 as well. They claim they've got some huge audience figures now, or potential audience figures, because they've got two terrible teams in Italy and two terrible teams in South Africa. Doesn't quite work in that simple type of manner. So I'm very suspect of both getting the Scots on board or the Italians on board or whoever's responsible for rugby in their country. And second of all, I'm very, very suspicious that you can just pull out a tournament which is made up out of thin air and it be successful.
It's strange, JB, because I know you are, and I believe in, broadly speaking, in the free market to solve problems, to lead to growth and development. When people are left unregulated and unfettered, things will improve and get better. And that's been...
I was blue.
Well, yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm liberal in the, you know, in the traditional sense, in that view. And so it's quite strange. I understand. So this is where I understand, like, just you throw in political language in. I understand, like, a conservative point of view is conserving things, keeping it as they are. But equally, I think in this case, that goes against the kind of deregulation and letting things grow. And I think there's an element of just by keeping things as they are and holding on to what you got, it's just going to shrink and shrink and shrink. And one of the bits of evidence for that this weekend, the Rugby Paper have been doing quite a bit of journalism, trying to really dig into this. The playing figures in England are way down. They've taken a nosedive on the participation levels, and they're trying to get some actual hard numbers on this, because I think the RFU are saying, no, it stayed flat. But I believe that's because of the growth in women's rugby. Yeah, but men's rugby has taken a big old nosedive.
Not at Disbury Talk H, I might add.
I have no doubt, JB. But I'm not saying there's correlation, causation. All I'm saying is rugby, I don't think rugby can afford to stand still. I think actually it needs to be more radical, because having the chance to stop and just look around and assess and hit pause and take a bird's eye view, how many more, like, I've been watching the All Blacks All or Nothing too much. These cliches about. We'll get into that on our next pod. But I just don't think rugby can stand still. I think it's got to be more ambitious and radical. And that doesn't mean we have to blow up everything that already exists, the Six Nations, the tradition and everything. But I just think we can't be where we are now, 2 years from now, or that's the equivalent of going backwards.
Thing is, we never know what will work. And, you know, if we did know, we would do it. My feeling is just imposing a tournament, which you've made up from scratch, onto people, won't excite people in the same way that the Super Rugby teams. Like, even in Australia, where they just said, hey, here's a new Super Rugby team. It worked for some time, and then it disappeared. Even South Africa, they've had to ditch two teams. People don't respond to it. So I'm all for letting, you know, if we find that there's a huge appetite for rugby in China, which allegedly that there is, they will set up their own tournaments. They will become good. They will start attracting in talent and coaches and all the rest of it. So I just don't believe that this big top-down hit, here is a tournament, go and play. To be successful as a nation or as a club, you've got to really love the game and you've got to really commit to it. And I'm not sure parachuting a team in or just making up fixtures on a calendar does that.
So I'm a bit more positive than that. I don't think that this is immediately going to solve all the world's rugby problems, but I think this is certainly a worthwhile avenue to explore, to have both the traditional rivalries that you already have and probably exploit some of the other rivalries. And what I mean by that is you're playing your Six Nations games and your Rugby Championship, all that stays pretty much exactly the same. It might move by a month either way, or a couple of months either way. Besides that, it stays exactly the same. Yeah. But then you get a guaranteed meaningful, if you respect the global league, game between England and New Zealand every year, between England and South Africa every year, between New Zealand and France every year, between Ireland and Australia every year, and Ireland and Argentina, which there's a lot of spice to and probably hasn't happened outside of a World Cup for years. That's happening, would happen yeah. every year.
I mean,
all that, you've already got the fundamental rivalries. You're just kind of leaning on them.
Yeah, I don't think putting the tournament in place makes them more or less important. In fact, I'd argue that it makes them less important, because say if you've got two teams at the foot of the table who are not playing for anything, it turns into a dead rubber, whereas a test match is always a test match. You could lose your last three test matches, but the next one means everything. So I'm not even convinced that the meaningful games will be that meaningful. Sorry to sound so miserable.
I think different people will look at it differently.
Yeah.
You might be right for amongst some of the diehard rugby fans, but the people who are going to watch every game regardless might consider that. But looking a bit wider and looking at trying to attract new people, I think that this is the kind of thing that would get more people engaged and involved.
I agree with that. The one thing that's lacking from just, you know, having the cross hemisphere games, which I'm in favour of, is, and I understand what you're saying, if there's an explosion of interest in China, they'll do their own leagues and it will bubble up from the bottom to the top. I get that. But if you don't have the carrot of aspiration just dangling there for Georgia, for Romania, then you're not going to get what Hans-Peter Will, the German billionaire Caprisun owner.
Yeah, yeah.
If you dangled that aspiration, hey, you've got a lot of money and you love rugby, there's a route, there's a pathway that means you could be sitting at the top table 10 years from now. All right, I'll sink 100 million into that. You shut that aspiration. I think you shut the door to. I mean, you're the one that in the past, JB, have rightly pointed out that rugby. JB, you're the one who's rightly pointed out in the past that rugby relies on wealthy individuals.
Yes, I wonder if the future of rugby is not as a mass participation global game, but more in the NFL style, which is. The very top end of it gets more popular, more eyeballs on it across the globe, but then the player base effectively shrinks and the leagues shrink and it just polarizes into one league or a handful of... And actually, if that happens, World Rugby have got to be very worried, because that does include nations. And, you know, look at football. International football is rubbish except for, you know, the World Cup. And even the World Cup is pretty rubbish until the finals. Everyone's got their eyes on the Premier League or maybe the Champions League, something like that. And I wonder if rugby's going to go the same way.
So it's going to be interesting to see. Now, this is just, these proposals are just that at the moment. They are just a hypothetical proposal to do something to bring more money into the game and get more engagement with the game. And we'll see where that goes. There's another one of Bill Bowman's, or a potential Bill Bowman proposal that was mentioned this week, and it's something that's interesting to us because it's something that we've mentioned many times in the past.
Not getting rid of
the knock on, not having a team sit out in the Premiership every year. It is allowing players who've only had a handful of caps for a one nation to switch nations.
Well done.
So a great example of this would be Tekele Nairivoru, who has, I think he's just got one cap for Australia. Fijian-born winger, who I believe, would like to represent Fiji for the next World Cup. So to have him have only one cap for Australia and then be prevented from playing for Fiji does seem a bit ridiculous. So if that can happen in time for the next World Cup, brilliant.
Yeah, I'd want to see the little... it sounds like another flow chart coming on. Another directive flow chart coming on. But I hope that flow chart isn't... You can't return... You can't have your second nation based on residency. It would have to be on birth or parentage.
Birth or parent, yeah. Which I think there'd probably be quite a lot of people, particularly who have had one or two caps for Australia or New Zealand, and even France, England, then being eligible for a Pacific Island nation. But with I guess the caveat on that, and I guess one of the caveats for the potential of a global league, if there were to be more funding spread around to the lower tier nations, is the Pacific Island, the organization, that the hierarchy of the Pacific Island nations would need to get their structures in place, which seems to be something that is still lacking, even given the recent stuff with Fiji's nomination for World Rugby Council that we've mentioned on the last few pods.
I don't know where the new calendar came from, but there was some stories knocking around today that Premiership clubs seem to be fairly in favour of shifting the season so that the Premiership season would start in December after the autumn tests, but would run to July, with the Six Nations moving to April-May.
April-May, I saw that.
It doesn't really bother. I mean, I don't have strong feelings about it.
Yeah.
No, I'd be fine with that.
That would just align. That would align the Super Rugby season with the Premiership and Top 14 season. Basically, is what it would do.
Yeah,
it's not the end of the world. I don't really care. That's fine.
No, that's fine. And I'd just how you'd fit it in with the Heineken Cup as well, because the Heineken Cup is one thing that I definitely don't want to lose the Heineken Cup, because I think it's such a good tournament every single year.
I'd be willing to lose everything but the Heineken Cup.
Heineken Cup, Premiership, Six Nations.
Yeah, something like that.
Keep those three. Anything else?
Do what you want with. Bin it.
Pretty much.
has there been any whispers on when rugby could potentially return in some way, shape or form? Because I know that the football are talking about June, and then there's been these ideas of rugby being done. Like, have you seen what they're doing in Aussie Rules?
Nope, no idea.
What they've got planned in Aussie Rules is basically all the players get tested and then taken to basically one location where all the players from all the teams live for 9 weeks, and they just do the season like that game on every day.
Just like Love Island.
They just like Love Island, but they just move away from their families and they live in this little complex and just do the tournament in 9 weeks.
I've seen that being at least muted for Premier League football, and just have everyone, and basically, because you can in football, you can play a game every 2 or 3 days, just crunch through the season. Every team plays every 2 or 3 games, 2 or 3 days.
They did when needs must. I mean, it used to be sacrosanct that rugby players could only play one game every week, and they can, but rugby teams can play more than one game per week, and that's slightly different. I think they'll probably do that.
I've not seen anything more come out of Premiership Rugby. As far as I'm aware, their previous statement, which was made a few weeks ago, which was they're not cancelling the season and it will return when it is safe to do so. That's the last thing I've seen. What I have seen besides that is, so the top 14 has officially been ended, and they are looking to focus on the next season. So their aim is to start in September 2020. But that does seem a bit, I don't know, a bit ambitious, and they might be playing without crowds, which allows them to fulfill TV fixture deals. So it gets half of it. Certainly, if that happens in the top 14 and there's no other rugby, I'll be watching the top 14. I'll be watching quite a lot of top 14.
Yes, I think Premier Rugby are probably keeping their powder dry. and seeing what football does.
Yeah, well, it's interesting football because I think football have been watching rugby coverage, and in the absence of a crowd, they're going, well, what else can we do that's good? And it's interesting that I was reading an article today about what Premiership football, Premier League football are planning, and it is effectively, let's do what BT Sport have been doing. can we get a quick halftime chat? Can we get cameras into the dressing rooms? Can we do a pre-match interview with a player in the changing room?
So I've not got any good answers for this yet, but presumably having a crowd has some opportunity costs. What are those opportunity costs, and how do you then?
Well, cameramen can't take shots of attractive women in the crowd. It's the main one.
Yeah, just put them into the crowd. That'd be fine. Or cut some catalogue shots. There must be something which a crowd doesn't let you do, which you can now do. I don't know what that thing is, but everything has an opportunity cost.
I wonder, right, what would it be like watching a game with no crowd but at the Racing Stadium? I still reckon they could make that seem pretty cool.
I tell you what, maybe that's it. Maybe because you don't have a crowd, you can afford to play your games in some of the coolest locations you can think of.
Yeah, because you don't need a 60,000-seater stadium.
No, you can play it. By the way, this isn't me telling you what's cool. I'm not saying the Trafford Centre is cool. But you could literally play it in the Trafford Centre.
Yeah.
4G. You could play it on a ship, as long as it's not moving. You know, you could play it in all sorts of weird locations. It'd be pretty cool, actually.
It should be done like, like the background in Street Fighter. You should...
Exactly, like on a mountaintop somewhere.
In front of a Buddhist temple.
Yeah, because you can do anything now.
On Machu Picchu.
Amazing.
like it's designed for rugby.
Yeah. So the Hanging Gardens of Babylon for England v South Africa.
Yeah, there are so many things. Yes, this is it. There are so many things that you can do because you don't have to, have a crowd.
You don't have to get 10,000 or 50,000 people to one location. You just need to get 23 or 40 people to one location.
A bit of turf and a temporary surface.
Yeah.
There you go.
To the pyramids at Giza.
I bet, though, that if you did, just try and work this out now, if you did have a rugby match somewhere weird, and you think, yeah, we've got no crowds, we don't need to take 20,000 people or 9,000 people, or whatever the crowd would be, I bet you'd still end up roping in thousands and thousands of people. You've got to have people to lay the turf, you've got to have people to man the, put up the floodlights, you've got to have a film crew there, you've got to have all the staff there, you've got to have an ambulance there, you've got to have all sorts of...
But it would be cool, because the bit of ground immediately outside Buckingham Palace, but before the gates, is about the size of a rugby pitch. Like, England could play their home games there. France, like behind one of the posts, could be the Eiffel Tower.
Why not? I mean, genuinely, why not? Play for landmarks.
Italy, play in the Colosseum.
That'd be cool.
Could they? Is it big enough?
Maybe not.
Do you know,
back in the day, this is something I learned from a Zoom quiz a few weeks back.
You could definitely play by the Eiffel Tower. I've been there.
Yeah.
There's definitely room there.
Back in the day, not only did they used to have like gladiator fights in the Colosseum and the other one, what was it called? The other one, whatever the other one in Italy is, in Rome is. In the Colosseum. They used to flood the Colosseum and have boat battles in it.
Then I thought you were going to say Cirque du Soleil from Canada. I don't know why. Just the way you said
rugby game on the strip in Vegas.
Yeah, that would be cool.
On a beach, on a coast. You see, ideas everywhere.
And our ideas get listened to. We were talking about Bath v Wigan, the cross code match on one of last week's podcasts. And what do you know? What's going to be one of the games played on Sky Sports this week? The cross code match, Bath v Wigan,
this Friday. It's both games. I think one kicks off at 7 and one kicks off at 9.
People listen. We pod. People listen. Things change.
Well, I don't know if they are listening, but maybe we should test them. by putting out a random game and seeing if they can show it.
Any games in mind?
Well, Tok H Ormskirk Cup final 2 years ago. glorious. Maybe three.
So my observation of... Oh, sorry, go on, Phil.
I was just going to say, just a point that links to the top 14 shutting down their season and links to something else that we're going to talk about, which we spoke about last week, is the French Union has given the green light for players to accept pay cuts. And the figures, I don't think, have been confirmed, but they were talked about at 31% in the top 14 and 25%, I think it was, in Pro Dida. So the French Union, the French Players Union, and France, as we know, are normally fairly militant unions and fairly heavily unionised. Yep. They've given the thumbs up to a pay cut, or two significant pay cuts for their...
I suppose in this case, it cuts both ways, because in France... this is a government thing, not even a players' union thing. This is just a nationwide thing. If a player goes over there, like Johnny Wilkinson, broken body in England, he goes over there, plays for Toulon, and gets injured, he gets paid by the government whilst injured.
Yeah. Which Toulon did it very famously with a few people, like Wilkinson.
Juan Smith
was probably the best example, actually, of having multiple failed operations and then getting back to being one of the best players in the world for an extended period of time, winning three Heineken Cups.
Incredible, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at least there is some in the other column. When they're taking stuff away, you can also look at the way how it is to be a player in France and go, you're pretty well looked after in other respects.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I just thought that probably links us quite nicely to the very interesting discussion we were having last week on Ellis Genge and the potential for a new union for UK or English players.
Yeah, so I mean, I've heard no further news about this really, other than what's been reported. And it does seem like this is picking up steam. I would not be surprised if there was an announcement maybe... Monday, well, certainly before Wednesday.
A Monday morning meeting.
Another
Monday morning meeting. Yes. Pretty sure, having looked at the Leicester Tigers situation, as we all did last week, that they will need a couple of Monday morning meetings, because as far as I can see, they are going to have to give ground. One of the things I was thinking this week, and I don't know if we discussed it last week, but if any Premiership rugby player gets a reduction in their pay, and they've not signed it off themselves, the club is in breach of contract. That player can just move, which is a really weird idea. But then I assume the clubs have got an agreement with each other not to sign each other's players in the case of them breaching contracts. And if that's the case, that's really out of order, if that is the case. So, that's one angle of this. The Rugby Pod, a rival podcast, did a very long bit on this, and I kind of disagree with almost everything that they said. Actually,
can you summarise the position they took? Because I didn't hear that.
There were two elements really. One was praising the RPA. And the other one was pointing out the naivety of the players involved. So just on the naivety of the players involved, it was reported this week, it was Ellis Genge and Greg Bateman's name came up. Well, if you look at this Leicester Tigers situation, actually, far from being naive, these boys have really paid attention, far more so than anyone else. And I think they've come out of this whole thing looking mighty impressive, because they're not asking for their money up front, as we spoke about.
Would you cross a picket line enforced by Greg Bateman and Ellis Genge?
No.
but they're
right. They've got basically all the cards. The club is in breach of contract, and they're not saying give us our money now. They're saying the opposite, which is if you, the ownership, are not able to invest in your club, and all the indications suggest that you're not able to, let us, the players, give you our money to keep the club going and also meet our salaries.
Well, that's not been reported yet, that, particular idea, but it's a neat idea if that was something they were to come up with.
Yeah, and well, yes, quite. you made me lose my train.
Sorry, JB, I apologise.
So Jay, just on that point.
Far from naive.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, just on that point, I listened to Ellis Genge on the BBC rugby podcast with Hugo Monya, Chris Jones, Danny Kerr, and Chris Ashton were all on there. And I thought Ellis Genge came across really well and really switched on and thinking about this in a different way. And what I mean by that is I think there would have been a lot of pressure on a lot of players just to accept it and sign any contracts. Any amended contract that's put in front of them, which effectively would take away their right to do exactly what JB explained, which would be accept this as a breaching contract and potentially move on if that is the right thing for the player. And so he didn't say there was any conclusion in this, but he was just trying to get awareness and get players thinking about the predicaments that they're in, the things that they're signing, and getting them the best advice. So that, I thought Genge came across really well from that.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Yeah, I could not be more impressed by the guy, quite frankly. Yeah, that's what I was going to say on Leicester Tigers, which is if they don't pay their players, if they just cut their salary. Remember, Leicester Tigers is up for sale for 60 million quid. That means one of the shareholders will walk away with 30 million quid if they sell it for the price that they're asking for. I have no problem with that whatsoever. In fact, I think it's a good thing. That said, if they want to do it by, you know, maintaining the club's value on the back of the players, that's not acceptable. So this is why the Ellis Genge position is far more nuanced and far more switched on than I thought he was given credit for. The second part was about the RPA and what a good job that they do. And we touched on this last week. The RPA do a good job, and you need to understand it in context. You need to understand more than one thing can be true at once. The RPA was set up with good intentions. They're filled with good people. They do good work. But it doesn't mean that on paper they do not look conflicted, because they clearly look conflicted. And it also doesn't mean that they're particularly good on things like player payments and the commercial side.
Yeah, so a couple of tangible examples of things that the RPA are great at, which, and remember, rugby's only just over 20 years into professionalism. The RPA are excellent at helping and financially supporting players to get qualifications, to organise their post-playing career, to help them with any mental health issues they have in adjusting to life after that, and any tangibles. So they're excellent at that. And that broadly you could put under a welfare umbrella. They're superb at.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think it's also unfair to say, oh, well, they're in the pocket of the clubs. Both the clubs and the RPA. The clubs didn't do this so they could manipulate the players in an underhand way. They did it because they thought it was the right thing to do at the time. But, you know, maybe it wasn't. Maybe they should have encouraged the players to pay for their own union, because then it could be truly independent. They could carry on doing the things that the RPA did. But the RPA is a very good organisation for welfare. As Ellis Genge just pointed out, and, you know, to his credit, is absolutely spot on with. They're not very good with the financials, so I think they should divorce that side of their organisation, basically hand it over to someone else. And one of the examples the Rugby Pod gave was the England deal, Now, on the face of it, they've got a really, really, really good point here. And I kind of appreciated the point they made, because for most people who listen to rugby podcasts, well, not most people, but a lot of people, a lot of casual rugby fans, rugby is the England team. Does anyone disagree with that?
There's a lot of people, probably fewer who listen to podcasts, but there are a huge number of people who only get engaged in rugby when England are playing, or when Wales are playing, or when Ireland are playing.
Agreed.
You're in Six Nations, Autumn Internationals, Summer Tours.
Yeah, so the all goes something like this, which is the RPA were instrumental in striking a deal with the RFU to make sure that the English players are the best paid players in the world. And that is undoubtedly true, and the RPA had a hand in that. But I would just counter this, which is, isn't the England deal more to do with keeping every other player's wages low, using a salary cap, yet having enough money in the pot to pay your top players? So A, you get tickets and, you get bums on seats at club level, and B, you can maintain the England team. It's more of a deal between the clubs and the RFU, which benefits both those parties and, of course, the England players, but almost at the expense of everyone else. I mean, you might, if that was the argument that the RPA have done a good deal with the RFU, you might then say, well, does that mean that every player in Bristol has had a bad deal because nobody plays for England? Does that mean that every English player does not have a good deal because, every non-English player who doesn't play for England, or English player who doesn't play for England, has a bad deal because...
Well, I think you're right to say that it was aimed at the top of the pyramid, because the deal that was struck was to keep England players very, very well compensated, and that would keep them playing in the English domestic league, because that's the only way they could access that high amount of money, and that makes the club game more attractive to sponsors, to broadcasters, and to fans, because they have that direct relationship with the England team and the clubs that the players represent.
But there's another way, which is, like you're saying, keep the English players in, that English internationals, and then we get more money for everyone else.
I think that is the cascade. It's England RFU is an international rugby is a cash cow, so we want the best players here, but we want them playing here so that we can market our domestic league.
Sorry, I'm just going to give a comparison that England and the RFU is slightly weird because of the big top unions. England's one of the few where there is a separation between the RFU and the clubs. If you look at New Zealand, Ireland, Wales, Scotland, Australia, I think South Africa is even the same, definitely Argentina. Pretty much everyone is centrally contracted, or certainly the top players are all centrally contracted. So even if... Jack McGraw is playing for Ulster, he is still under an IRFU contract, and they have control over game time and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So England is different in that regard. And that is probably one of the things, that might even be the biggest thing that has led the England players to be the best paid players when they're playing internationals.
Yeah, just on this, do you think the general RPA membership, which is not just Premiership players, but also... Championship players, do you think they would rather an increase in match fees for the England squad, or do you think they would like better injury protection?
The average person.
Yes. I mean, I know what Anthony Watson wants.
Yes, yeah. But the average, given that there is a 30-man England squad and, I don't know, 600 people in the RPA, something like that, it's going to be better match protection or an increase in the salary cap or something like that, but more money across everything, not more money in one narrow silo.
Yeah. Actually, you might even argue there might not be enough money in the game to execute that, but I just don't like the principle that is... I don't give the RPA any real credit for that. I don't blame them for letting it happen either. I just see it as a neutral thing. I don't think that's a reason to say the RPA are doing a particularly good job on the financial side. That's all. That's the only point I'm making.
Just one point that I couldn't help thinking when I was listening to Alice Genge, and this is something that an article by Andy Goode in Rugby Pass that I read, this does align to it. I couldn't help thinking when I was listening to Genge that have these boys been let down by their agents? like totally let down by their agents. And the reason I was thinking that was Gendry was talking about bespoke contracts. So different players need different contracts. And he was suggesting that in rugby, it's pretty much off the shelf contracts for everyone, whether you are an 18-year-old academy lad or you're Maro Itoje. Which it just seems totally ridiculous because the talent profile, the commercial profile, the risk profile of those players are totally different. And then when he was talking about his, but the contract side, but the commercialization side and getting adequate, bespoke, tailored legal advice, just all of that seemed to come across as surely that is what the agent should have been doing on the player's behalf right across the board. And actually maybe that would be the bigger thing out of what Genji is putting forward. Maybe it is that the opportunity for people to have proper quality tailored advice.
Yeah, and I think that links to the RPA again, which is why not regulate. Regulate is not the right word, but almost a whitelist of agents that, yeah, this guy's good, this guy's good, this guy's good. Why are they good? Maybe there's a seal of approval which they can get. You know, I think there is a huge variance in advice that agents give, and I mean that in terms of quality. But in fairness to the RPA, what Gage is referring to, which is a standard contract, is exactly that. It's what's in the RPA implemented to make sure that all the injury clauses are the same, or as a said in the championship, it's basically like the Wild West. So that, you know, that, you know, that, again, but that's just an example of the RPA being good at the welfare aspect. But you know, to go back to the point on bespoke contracts, I think the money and how you structure the money, you know, how many games that the players contracted for, that is all stuff that the agent should be doing.
Yeah, it does sound like they're failing.
Broadly speaking, and again, if you aim this at the average rugby player rather than the top 30 players in England, then I think what you've got to remember is they're not on very much money.
Yeah, true.
This is what fans need to understand. There is good evidence out there that middle-class people in particular tend to have kids later and later and later because of housing costs and this, that and the other. And there's a time where you become financially stable enough that you go and have kids, and that's getting later all the time. Rugby players tend to have kids much earlier. In essence, what they do is they bring all of their expenses forward, whether it be more higher repayments on mortgages, whether it be having kids. They do it in the middle of their career when they're earning more, because later on in life they're not going to have that cash when they stop playing rugby. This is something which people have completely overlooked. They just say, well, you know, they're on more money than John the plumber. That's not how this works. A lot of people in their 20s are not earning as much as rugby players, but by the time they get into their 40s, their 50s, their 60s, they will be earning more, and all those big expenditures like paying off the mortgage and whatnot will happen for them then. Rugby players do it the other way around, and it's just important that people recognise that.
Yeah, and but I guess one of the reasons I brought up if you just think about the average player, they're not on a lot, is that, well, how are you going to get huge? How are you going to get such bespoke, tailored advice when you're talking about someone that's earning 60, 50, 50k a year?
Yeah,
you're not going to get it. You're going to get an off-the-shelf contract. It's like you if you've got 150 quid to spend on a suit, you're going to get it off the shelf, not tailored.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, that's a very good point, and that could be something that this does solve. And actually, where in Genji's scenario, where he's looking for that to look after the guys that are perhaps on less money. Yeah. That's something that will really benefit. It'll benefit more people, and arguably more vulnerable people, or people who are not in the 500k a year contracts, 200k MyProtein deal, 200k Adidas deal,
Vitality.
Yeah, Vitality.
Coco water.
Beats by Dre.
So here's a story, and it is a common urban myth. I can't tell you who the characters are involved or who told me.
Can we guess?
There you go. I wouldn't guess anyway. But it goes something like this. Somebody set up a rugby agency. And the way they set up the rugby agency is by sending out 60 Xboxes. And that's how they got their initial client bank. nothing to do with their qualifications in reading contracts. They are negotiating deals. Here are some Xboxes, boys. Please sign up.
Which is why, and if that is true, then there is an element of choices and consequences, and we shouldn't necessarily think of, we shouldn't necessarily cast rugby players as some kind of victimized group of people. They could just have made bad decisions.
Yeah, they have, right? But let me tell you this. If I was on the staff of a rugby club and some Xboxes dropped through the door, I'd be asking questions immediately. Like, where did that come from? What do they want from you? You know, what are they asking you to sign up for? There'd be lots of questions that I would be asking to make sure. Because ultimately, you are right, Tim. They are free to make bad decisions. Believe you me, plenty.
And they're adults. Let's not forget.
But they're also my number one asset. And I want my number one asset to be as financially stable and untroubled as possible. And that includes on the financial side too. So I think I'd be asking a lot of questions if I was at a club.
You'd be treating all your number one assets like Wagyu beef.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly.
Doing the
right.
Massaging, checking for a nice marbling throughout there.
But then on the flip, there's like the Clive Woodward, his whole philosophy and what the, you know, he was, even though rugby turned professional, there were talk about some nations in that 03 era, you know, very, very controlled. And Clive Woodward said, right, you're adults. Yeah, if you want your families about, have your families about. If you want to go out for a drink, go out for a drink. I just expect you to do the professional job. And it's your choices and consequences. And it was left to the players. And
I agree.
Yeah.
There's one thing, go out for a few drinks with your family. Or even go get smashed all night and come back in 24 hours in the same clothes which you left in. That's one thing. It's another thing entirely to say, you know, get this absolute idiot to deal with your contract. And by the way, I'm not saying any of these guys are idiots. I'm not saying that. I refer it to an American football situation. The running back, what was his name, who played for Miami Dolphins? Anyway, doesn't really
matter.
What
era? Doesn't matter.
Ricky Williams had the rapper Master P as his agent. You know, that's not going out for 24 hours. That's signing away all of your earnings.
Did either of you, just on the go out, have your family around, go out for a few drinks, relax, take care of yourself, did either of you see the Gitto interview on House of Rugby?
Yeah, it's excellent.
Was it House of Rugby? I can't remember. One of those things where he's talking about Eddie Jones, and he did an amazing Eddie Jones impression. But he was also saying what Eddie Jones did to get the best out of him, and just the indecision that Eddie Jones left him with.
I listened to this, and I kind of thought of you here, Phil, because we like to talk about this sort of rubbish.
We do.
That makes for a good workforce.
Not knowing what your boss is actually wanting you to do or thinking.
Yeah.
I loved the have a beer, mate. I loved that story. Like, and Gitto's described it as like, still now, Gitto's age, what, 36, 37, something like that. Still now, when he sees Eddie Jones in Japan, his heart starts racing because he doesn't know how to react. I love talking about this kind of stuff, and like this signing, I think, is really interesting, both from a rugby and from like a normal everyday work life perspective. And it's something that I'm more aware of now, is the man management type thing. There is no one size fits all solution. And we'll come on to it in the next pod on the All or Nothing documentary. But there was times when there was stuff that Hansen was saying, and I was confident that it would hit a note, it would strike a chord with maybe 50 or 60% of the people in that group. But then it's how you manage the other. How do you get it up to 80, 90, 100% of the people are pulling in the right direction? And stuff like that that would work with Gitto would not work with other people like that. I can't see that would work with someone like Kirtley Beale, for example, just to stick in the Australian, or James O'Connor to stick in the Australian groups. So I think that way of bringing it up to 100% of the people fully engaged, that is a real, real leadership skill.
So that's not the first time I've heard Gitto do an Eddie Jones impression.
Oh, really?
No, he did one for me.
Mate, have a beer, mate.
It's a cracking story, though.
It's an amazing story.
What was the other Eddie Jones story he told you then?
Basically about how, like, about the first time he got picked as a 19-year-old. But yeah, he does do it. The only person who does a better impression or an impression on par with Matt Kittel is David Flatman doing Matt Stevens, which actually brings tears to my eyes.
That's why I think there might be a few impressions being dusted off in the next podcast we're doing on the All or Nothing New Zealand. I think I might have Sonny Bill Williams down to a T.
Oh, nice. I can't wait to hear that.
No, just broadly speaking, I think on this whole RPA issue, I'm massively in favour of players having access to high quality advice, which can be tailored to them. I think that's a great point, which between you, the pair of you, you both made. I also think I just want to stop short of, and this is what I've started to read and hear people starting to kind of portray rugby players either like they're victimized or like they're or like we're infantilizing them, like they're not adults. They are. As long as they've got access to information, they can make bad decisions if they want, but give them the right help and the right support so they can avoid it if they choose to.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, and that is fair, because you can give these guys all the information in the world and some of them will still go out and buy Range Rovers and drink and do whatever else with their money.
Well, if you remember, Phil, we actually met a rugby player on a rooftop bar in Manchester who was hanging out with a guy.
I really didn't know where that conversation was going to go then. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, which was an eye-opener. I never told this story before, but we met a guy, a well-known England rugby player in a rooftop bar, and he was hanging around with a guy who sells, who leases cars to the United squad. And the way he does it is he's saying, right, guys, what you need to remember is the average household spends 30% of their disposable income on car repayments. So what's your disposable income?
Oh, my God.
Oh, £100,000 a week after tax. I've got this. We go, perfect. Here are five cars. And that is why so many of the United squad have multiple cars parked in drives around Audley Edge because of this guy.
It was unbelievable listening to it.
I'm just looking at the player in question thinking, if I was more of a man, I'd probably bundle him into a lift, put him in a taxi and send him home. This is not where he needs to be right now.
This guy sounds like Saul Goodman. Have you watched Better Call Saul?
Yes.
Oh my God, I'm in season three in that. It is. I can't believe I've waited so long to watch it. It's amazing.
I can't watch.
You can't.
You can't.
I find it too sad because I really like the Kim character. She's really nice and sweet, and you know something's going to happen to her because she's not in. Well, because she's not in Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I know. I keep thinking, no spoilers, please, because I mean, towards the end of season three, but I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to have a horrible moment where they're not going to be together anymore. And
yeah. So I just gave up watching it. I don't need that in my life.
Those two are amazing television. Breaking Bad is probably my favorite ever.
I think I prefer Better Call Saul. I think I do.
They're both sensational.
It is amazing. Let's leave it there because I need to put some power into this iPad. And I think we've covered everything.
The only other thing I had was the Freddie Burns going to Japan. There's been a few announcements of people retiring, people leaving the game. But Freddie Burns to Japan it's quite an interesting story because we might be starting to see this kind of move a bit more frequently at the moment. So he's one to watch.
Is he? Alex Good has also decided to move.
Has he?
Mako Vunipola is apparently weighing up his options as well.
I mean, I think it's good for one or two players. I can't see there being enough money out there for the whole of the Premiership to go.
No. And that's people are going to have to make their mind up quick because, there's not that many spaces available out there. Mm-hmm. There's good money if you get one of those spaces, I understand. If you're the likes of Dan Carter or Kieran Reid or one of those players who goes out there. But
I think we'll start seeing we'll start seeing players doing multiple seasons in 1 year. They'll go, I'll do Japan, then I'll come and do, then I'll do Super Rugby, then Japan, and then I'll do a 4 month Premiership stint.
That's what I would do.
Which has been more common for South African players for a number of years, for them to do Super Rugby and then go and do 3 months in Japan.
Or 3 months in Sale Sharks.
Or 3 months in Sale Sharks, yeah. 3 months in Sale Sharks, supposed to sign for Gloucester, actually sign for Gloucester, and then sign for Sale Sharks.
Mix up. It was unfortunate. I don't think we need to revisit that. All been dealt with. There's no need to go over old ground.
What workout? Just quickly before we end this podcast, a quick update on your weekly exercise. What you've been doing?
Oh my god. So I've really got into it, to the point I've bought myself some new trainers, which set me back. Metcons, Tim. I'm like a little CrossFitter in my own backyard.
I don't know what they are.
Metcons. What?
Never heard of them.
They're like the Nike version of Reebok Nanos. They're CrossFit specific Nike trainers. I'm on my third pair of Metcons now. I love them. I think they're great.
Yeah, so they're, sadly they were not next day delivery, which is COVID's really inconvenienced me. I couldn't get a 20 kg kettlebell, so I got a 28 kg kettlebell. That's arriving on Friday.
Nice.
But this is the one which really got me today. So my running's been really slow because I've been, been doing run in the morning, weights at night. My legs are heavy, and whatnot. So yesterday I took a day off, ordered myself a very rare treat, a pizza, had a beer, went running this morning, and I felt very, very fast. So I started off okay, and I got quicker and quicker and quicker. But what you knew, I was looking at my watch and thinking, I'm going to beat my 5K time here. In fact, I'm not just going to beat it. I'm going to absolutely ruin it.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I did my maths wrong. So it's 0.6 miles, and my watch counts in miles. 0.6 miles per K. 5K, 5 times 0.6. Somehow, I managed to add that up to 2.8. I don't know how. So I basically slowed down after 2.8. Otherwise, I'd have done under 22 minutes for my 5K. Devastated. I was flying towards the end.
You've definitely got it in you then for a sub 22.
Yeah.
Next time.
In the last 7 days, I'm just looking at my little Garmin app. In the last 7 days, I've done 161 miles on my bike.
Nice.
Not, and I haven't gone onto any roads. That's all on Zwift. I've been doing, because the races are amazing.
Really?
Yeah. So I've been waiting basically till everyone goes to bed, and then in the living room, in the back room, I just pull the little sofa out. I hook up my phone to the telly. I can look on the screen, do a race with hundreds of other people, sometimes in teams, sometimes in.
It's pretty cool, actually.
In solo, and it's absolutely awesome. It's so clever. I love it.
Yeah, I've got a few friends on Strava who do it pretty much every day and have done like major hills, major mountains across the world doing it, doing races in Toronto and New York and everywhere else. It does look pretty good fun.
It's quite addictive.
Do you know the other thing? This is a bit geeky. Do you know what I've really got into for the last few weeks? Like really got into it. Motorsport. I can't watch enough motorsport. I've been watching old Indy 500 qualifying laps today.
Qualifying laps for old Indy 500? I
can't is even allowed to be on. So it started off watching the F1 docs. Nice like one, so on and so forth. And then that kind of spiraled into, I've just gone to YouTube, find out about this driver, that driver. Before you know it, I'm watching 40-minute videos about why the Williams team is no longer successful. And that links into, some American stuff. I watched a documentary last night about an old, a black driver who didn't quite make it because racism. That led me on to the Indy 500. I can't wait for the Indy 500 later on this year. Should they run it?
Well, they can definitely run that. People are in different cars. Just get rid of the crowd.
But on a serious note about F1, I'll talk about this on a different podcast. Rugby Sevens needs to study the F1 model because that's where it's at.
Hmm. Interesting.
Right, Cod, let's wrap it up. I need to charge my iPad.
Right, you know what to do. You know where we are. We've got another podcast coming in your feed where we're going to be talking about the Amazon Prime, behind the scenes documentary on the All Blacks, All or Nothing. We'll be getting into that. Hit subscribe in your feed so you get that one coming, and make sure you follow him at Jay Beardmore, me at Cocker, and Phil is lurking on social media. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.